They wanted to give me a 4 milligram shot of Dilaudid. I tried to fight them. They said, if we don't give it to you, you're going to die. I said, if you do give it to me, I'm still going to die. Because I knew that if you give me a 4 milligram, if I feel the euphoria, then it's going to reactivate. That's my mentality at this point. So I finally agreed to a 0.5 milligram shot of Dilaudid. You know, in comparison to the 4 milligrams they wanted to give me. And it brought my blood pressure down. It alleviated that. And so they put me into, I get back to my room. So this is 8:30 p.m. on October the 10th. At 5 p.m. on October 11th, I was discharged from the hospital.
That was today's guest, David Riggins, talking about how he refused pain medication with a leg amputation going on, if you can imagine. And he did that because he was worried about the effects that medication would have after, you know, it was done doing what it was supposed to do due to his opiate addiction. So I'm really proud of him for doing that. I don't recommend anybody do that because I can't imagine that kind of pain, but it kind of shows the strength that this man has. So kudos to him for that. Listen, today's episode is brought to you by the Yatra Treatment Center here in Krabi, Thailand, where I reside. For those of you that have not been following along so far, I came to Thailand to get my traumas addressed, and Yatra, that's what they do. They do nothing but trauma, and they do it really, really well. So check them out, guys. You can check them out just by visiting our website at h2apodcast.com/trauma. And there you'll find a whole series on trauma that Mike Miller, the head clinician there, has done, as well as some other episodes he's done with us. And, of course, links to his website and all that jazz if you're curious about attending or taking advantage of some of their online offerings as well, as far as therapy goes. So check them out, guys. It's really worth doing. Anyway, here's the episode. Listeners, supporters of all kinds, welcome to another episode of the Ashes to Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Chuck LaFlange, checking in from Krabi, Thailand, halfway around the world, somewhere in Tennessee. Is a fellow content creator, David Riggins. How are you doing today, David?
Actually, no, I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. I'm sorry. Yes. So yeah, somewhere in North Carolina is a fellow content creator, David Riggins. There we go. I did my do-over. Yeah. So how are you doing today, David?
I'm doing pretty good. Just enjoying this warm weather.
Yeah. I can
yours
appreciate
is probably
that.
Warmer.
Well, you know what? I didn't even realize it till like a couple weeks ago. Summer's just starting here in Thailand. Things are about like, and I like, it was like, what? It hasn't been hot yet. And they're like, oh no, it hasn't been hot yet. So 95 is going to be the new norm here. Like, well, it's already, we're pretty much there now. 95 in American, 35 in, you know, the rest of the world. It's hot, man. It's really, really hot. Even at night now, even at night, it's like 85, 90 degrees. It just doesn't give, right? So
the humidity is higher there too. Also,
you know what? You would think so. I'm a 20 minute scooter drive from the beach, 30 minutes maybe. And, but it's not that humid. And I don't know why that is. You would think it would be, right? But it is, when you walk out, it's that dry heat that just hurts your skin. It's so hot, right? Like it's, I do not enjoy it, but that's why at 9:30 at night, it's great for me to jump on with you because now it's the cooler part of the day. So typically I try and work throughout the night to try and avoid some of that daytime heat. Right. But yeah.
I understood that.
Yeah. AC is only in my bedroom. So. Hey, man, listen, we were talking beforehand. We don't like to do a ton of the whole, you know, war stories and that from our using days. But we got to establish what's going on with you. And I know a couple things about you, but I certainly don't know your story. If you kind of want to, I'll start out with one line of questioning I like to do just because I find it very interesting, David, is do you remember the first time you got messed up?
First time I used?
Yeah.
I was 9 years old. Oof. I started with the green.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And well, so how did that come to be? Let's ask that first. And then I've got a specific line of questioning, so bear with me. But how did that come to be?
Just a kid that was running around with older individuals. My nickname was actually Shorty when I was a kid. And the reason was because when I was 11 years old, I was hanging out with my 18-year-old cousin and his friends. So he's like, yo, this little Shorty want to be a thug. The old Tupac song.
Yeah.
In 1995, about 12 years old, the Tupac song "Shorty Want to Be a Thug" come out. So they was like, "Yo, this little Shorty want to be a thug out here running with us." So,
all right. Do you remember how it made you feel specifically in that time?
Empowered. I thought I was like, and thought I was like the cool kids. That was the mentality at that time. I wanted to fit in.
Okay. So with benefit of hindsight, do you think at the time, you're 9 years old. You don't have enough self-awareness for anything. Just cool and empowered, I guess, right? Or correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but. You
know. Exactly.
Yeah. Fair enough, Abe. Okay. So how do we go from smoking a joint at 9 years old to being on a recovery podcast?
The military. At 9/11 happened, I was a senior in high school. So 9/12, I skipped school and went and signed up for the Army.
Wow.
So in May of 2002, because obviously I had to graduate high school before I could actually leave for basic training. So May of 2002, I leave for basic training. I go through basic. I go to AIT, which is the schooling. I complete that. I go to airborne training, and a safety harness fails. I fall from 15 foot. fall onto a cement pad, land standing upright, snap my ACL, my MCL, and both knees. Spent 14 months in a physical therapy ward before I was finally medically discharged with a humongous narcotic prescription.
No kidding. Boom.
Kid that never even took a pain pill in his life, all of a sudden has got more narcotics than somebody that weighs four times as much as him should have.
And that would have been right at the height of the opiate, like... The prescribed opiate epidemic, I guess, right? Right when it was ramping up, yeah. I suppose, eh? No kidding.
The next 7 years, boy, they gave me, for 7 years, I went to a pain clinic and was given massive amounts. Now, all of a sudden, the government said we're giving out too many.
Such a familiar story, right?
Yeah. Yep. Then what happens? You have to sit there and continue. You're so physically dependent by that point. Not even mentioning the pain, the physical dependence, the addiction at that point had overtaken to a point it was extreme.
Did you realize that at the time? Did you know that you had a problem by that point?
Oh, yeah. I had been abusing them for almost 3 years before this happened. I was breaking them down and injecting them 3 years before the pain clinic before I got cut back at the pain clinic.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Right. So by then you already know it was hey, my buddy knows where to get them on the street. Buying them. They're too expensive. Heroin's cheaper.
Jesus, man. Jesus. Now, 9 years old, you smoke that joint. You ever think it's going to lead to heroin use, right? No, right? Like that's.
I never fathomed that.
No kidding, man. No kidding. Similar to yourself, I never in a million years would have thought that I'd get to a place where I was slamming anything. For me, it was meth. It wasn't opiates. But I look back on that now and go, it was such a weird progression, though. Like that. It's something I've never thought to ask. That first time you put a needle in there, does it occur to you how fucking messed up that is, or is it a natural process that gets you there?
That's the funny thing right there. For 4 years, the first 4 years I did it, nobody knew I did. I was embarrassed to let anybody know. My friends said, even the ones I would go buy them from, I would go and buy pills, and like I'd sniff one over with them. That way they thought that's what I was doing, and then I'd really leave to go shoot them. Okay. I remember going to Tractor Supply, buying the ones to vaccinate dogs, the 22 gauge huge needles, and sitting in Taco Bell parking lot, sticking myself, trying to teach myself how to do it.
Wow, man!
First time, that's how it was. I'm by myself in Taco Bell parking lot using a damn dog needle, trying to figure out how to do it.
Wow. And it doesn't, and I don't know if it's the same for you, same for me. At the time, it was just like, oh, I might as well try this. I can't say it didn't cross my mind, but it's just that addict brain, right? Where it's just like, I guess this is the next thing to do, I suppose, right?
It seemed
like such a casual thing. And wow, is that not a casual thing, right? The whole world that you're introducing yourself to when you start going down that, right? Right. Of course,
it's unfathomable.
I have a tremor, right? So it was like tattooing myself half the time. Right? it was horrible, man. It was horrible. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had really, really, really good veins, but unfortunately, it was way too easy for me.
Yeah, right.
Way too easy.
Jeez, right. Mm-hmm. So here you are. You're, I don't know how old. How old would you be at that point?
When I started, 23.
Okay. So what happens over the next few years to get you to where you are now?
Yeah. Well, then, the progression, as you could well assume, it overtakes you to a point that at a speed that you don't even realize what's going on. Before you realize it, you've went from somebody with a good job, a wife, twin sons that were born. I've got 14-year-old twin boys that were born July 4th. To go from that to being homeless and having to overtake you to that point. On December 20th, 2022, I got so intoxicated on illicit fentanyl, I laid there while a space heater fell on my leg and burned it. So I had 85% of my left leg was third degree burns. When I came to, I was in the UNC, burn unit ICU at UNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. 56 days, six surgeries. I left out of there with a below the knee amputee February the 8th, 2023. So 13 months ago.
Yeah.
And as you see, I'm not a below the knee amputee anymore. I'm an above the knee amputee now.
I was going to say, did I see those pictures wrong? So what happened after that then, bro?
Yeah, that was the first set of surgeries. Okay. I had seven major surgeries last year.
Wow.
So I got out of the hospital February the 8th. Around May, in the lower portion of your leg, you have two bones, the fibula and the tibula. The
tibula, yeah.
Okay, the fibula bone, which is the smaller of the two in the lower section of your leg, became it started sticking out of the end of my stump. But what had happened was, is when they cut my leg off, they cut that bone jagged, and it started cutting me from the inside out. And it stuck out that far. I went through four rounds of bone infections. I have to
interrupt, David. What's going on with your addiction at this point?
Obviously, December 20th, when I got burned, obviously I'm in full-blown addiction at this point. Yeah. I go to the hospital. They put me on massive, massive narcotics. I'm on a ketamine drip. I was on everything under the sun.
Yeah.
And so when I got out February the 8th, I was like, I cannot do this. I knew that I had to change. On February the 9th, I went to the methadone clinic. Okay. I'm a full advocate for MAT. Yeah. However, it works for everybody. For me, it's not a long-term option. Yeah. I only went there for 45 days. The day I went there, I told them, I said, my intentions is to wean myself off, because I was obviously on a massive amount in the hospital. So when I got out, even though I didn't want to use anymore, the physical dependency is still there. Yes, I had to take care of the physical dependency. So I went to the methadone clinic and told them day one, I want to detox. I did a 45 day run there and titrated down from day one I have not touched the opiate since.
And they were supportive of that?
I didn't give them a choice.
Okay. Okay. Well, I've heard horror stories about,
they were not 100% behind it, but with the way I came at them, they said, you know what? It looks like your mentality is going to do it either way. We'll help you. And so they were with me at that point.
Okay. So I'm sorry to interrupt. Now you're going back in. You're going back in for another set of surgeries because the bone is starting to cut through the stump. What at that point specifically, where are you at with your addiction? Like what's going on that way?
That's actually, to be honest, in my opinion, one of the most powerful video series that I have on my platform. Okay. On October the 10th, 2023, 5 months ago, I went into the VA hospital in Durham, North Carolina to have an above the knee amputation done because they told me where that bone was sticking out. I went through four rounds of bone infections. They said, if we don't cut more off of you, you're going to die. I told them, we got an issue. I'm not letting you cut more off of me and give me pain medication. How is that possible? You can't get your leg cut off without pain medication. I said, yes, I can.
Wow.
I had to sign a waiver with the anesthesiologist to agree for them not to use narcotics in the anesthesia, even when they put me under. Ooh. When I came out of surgery at 8 on October the 10th, my blood pressure was 240 over 1. I was beginning going to shock. My whole body was just like that.
Just from the pain.
They said, we have to give you something or you're going to die. I said, if they wanted to give me a 4 milligram shot of Dilaudid, I tried to fight them. They said, if we don't give it to you, you're going to die. I said, if you do give it to me, I'm still going to die. Because I knew that if you give me a 4 milligram, if I feel the euphoria, then it's going to reactivate. That's my mentality at this point. So I finally agreed to a 0.5 milligram shot of Dilaudid, in comparison to the 4 milligrams they wanted to give me. And it brought my blood pressure down. It alleviated that. And so they put me into, I get back to my room. So this is 8:30 p.m. on October the 10th. At 5 p.m. on October 11th, I was discharged from the hospital. The doctor came in about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the, you know, the next day. So, you know, what, 20 hours after surgery. And so you keep refusing your pain medication. You're done with your IV antibiotics. Only thing you're going to do from this point forward is sit in that bed. You may as well be at home sitting in the bed. I said, write the discharge papers.
Oh, shit.
He looked at me. He said, are you serious? He was trying to scare me so that I would say, no, I need to be here with the pain medicine. Because obviously I wasn't not getting pain medicine because I wasn't offered it.
yeah. Right.
But so there's literally, I have videos where, on my thing where I'm in pre-op right before surgery because I was scared. So, and yeah. I said, you know, that I will be doing another video as soon as I get out of surgery. And if this is the last one, I still love y'all. Because, you know, literally 20 hours later, I have a video of me in the car sitting there saying, guess who's already been discharged. So it's well documented that that's literally how it happened.
The pain, can you?
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Don't imagine not sleeping for 3 weeks.
Wow.
But
man.
I knew what was going to happen, you know. So I did have a half a milligram shot allotted immediately out of anesthesia. I did. They wrote me five oxycodone fives, and I ended up taking two of them. And I still have three of them in the cabinet in there. And this has been since October the 11th, 2023, 5 months later. I still have three of those pills that they gave me in there. I consider that a fucking win right there.
Yeah, that's a win by any standard, bro. By any standard, man. That's amazing. And kudos to you for that. Congratulations to you for having that kind of strength, because I don't know many people in the world, myself included, who could do that. So, you know.
Well, do you know why I did it? I did not do it because, honestly, it was not 100% because I was scared I would relapse. That was part of it, but the true reasoning for it was I done it as a personal challenge to myself. I said, if I'm strong enough to not use during this, there is not a damn thing life can ever throw at me where I'll question my sobriety again.
Well said, man. Well said. That's amazing, bro. It's absolutely amazing, man. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that, to be honest with you. Right? So, wow. So, how long before you're normal? I mean, you know, as far as you're at a point, I mean, normal is such a subjective word, right? But how long before you're at a point where the pain isn't the only thing on your brain anymore? Like, how long does that last? And how long before you could start getting back to working on just you and your recovery and all the things, right? Like,
that's another one that I'm amazed people with. 3 days after surgery, I started working out a few months before surgery with plans for it so that I could try to be in good shape. But 3 days after surgery, I started working back out again.
Holy shit. You're allowed to skip leg day though, right? Like, come on.
No. Well, listen to this one. 3 days after surgery, I have a video on there of me in my backyard right here with a cinder block tied to my leg to my stump with a rope while I'm sitting there doing pull ups and leg lifts.
Wow.
3 days after surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because I said the better physical shape I'm in, the easier the transition is going to be once I knew I would get my leg.
Yeah,
I got my leg finally, my permanent leg on January 3rd.
Okay, your prosthetic, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I wanted to be in as good a physical shape as possible, you know, with plans of, because obviously if recovery, no matter physical recovery, mental recovery, whatever it may be, it takes work. You know, that's what's all about. That's like our buddy Josh Catlett, stay consistent and recover.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
100% it is, 100%. So I got to say, man, you're blowing my mind right now, right? So... So that's not even that long ago, right? That's pretty fresh wound, if you will. Of course, when I started paying attention to you, I guess, geez, man, that would have been right out of cert, almost like, holy cow, thinking about that now, you'd have been pretty fresh. That was only a few months ago now, right? So what's going on nowadays? What's going on? I know there's lots of things you want to talk about. So let's let's get to the mess instead, or the message instead of the mess, right? So what's happening these days?
Well, basically with me, to be honest, I have what's called survivor's guilt.
Mm.
You know, I have that mentality and that question in my head of, you know, why did I survive? Why was I let to survive? So I come to the conclusion There was a better plan for me. There's a bigger plan for me. I'm supposed to sit there and use my pain, use what happened to me to sit there and try to help other people realize that, hey, like my buddy Jimmy McGill always says, so long as you see that breath in your lungs, you become a productive member of society. Yeah. You can turn it around. Don't matter how deep you went into it. You know, I want to show people, hey, look, I started off as somebody I thought the trajectory of my life was going to go to a good point. And look where it took me. You know, as they say, you know, Fifth Avenue to Park Avenue to Park Bench, addiction can get anybody. So, you know, just realizing that you could overcome it, that's what it's about. So now my efforts are trying to spread awareness and trying to get out into my community and try to lift others up.
Okay.
That's what it's about.
Okay. That survivor's guilt is a funny thing, hey? I agree with you on that one, man. When I, the couple of days before I left for Thailand, I went back to people, places, and things that I probably shouldn't have, just to say some goodbyes because I knew I probably wasn't going to go back to Canada. And when I saw the struggle that people who I really cared about and called friends were still in, it just like it hit me really, really hard. You know, one thing to remember it through that fog, but to go back in and see it again was just like, you know, with that sobriety lens on, it was heartbreaking, right? Just heartbreaking. So,
totally understand.
Yeah, just risky behavior for somebody with, you know, a year under their belt, to say the least. But it's something I felt I had to do. But so that drives you now, and of course you've got the Heal, right? And the Heal family.
Yeah. Yes, the Heal family, which means to help others, empathize for others, accept others, and love others. Because everyone goes through a struggle. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, mental health, if it's SA, if it was child abuse, if it was DV, if it's drug abuse, whatever. Everybody has a struggle. Yeah, so thus, my community is not just about recovery of drugs. My community is about lifting up individuals that are struggling with something.
Yeah, man. Yeah, right. You know,
it's about getting together as a communal group to lift others up. That's what Heal is about.
Absolutely, man. I love that about it. I love that. What's that website? Just we're near the end of the episode, but I just might as well say it now that you've said it. So
there you go. My website is www.
Okay, and of course that'll be in the show notes. It'll be available to anybody who wants to take a look at that. So there's a couple of things. You talked about Matt for a second. Let's talk about that for a bit, Dave, if you don't mind. David or Dave? Do you mind, David?
David. Okay. I prefer.
Yeah. Okay, Dave. Okay. Of course, I mean, if you're in the recovery world, if you're in the content creation world and, you know, part of that whole recovery community, you're going to see the hard arguments about Matt. Some of what I feel is just horrible, hateful stuff that comes out of people's mouths still. But you said you're accepting of Matt. Of course, it worked for you on the short term. What are your thoughts on the, I think I know how you feel about it in a personal way, but you tell us on this, if you're not completely clean, which I'm not a fan of that word at all, and sober, that you're not in recovery. Where do you weigh in on that one, Dave? David?
My belief with it is all paths to recovery are valid, 100%. You know, whether it's MAT, whether it's smoke therapy, whether it's deliverance from the Lord, whether it's complete chemical abstinence, whatever your route is, it's 1,000% valid. Because at the end of the day, to me, recovery means a progression towards a more positive life than what you were living before, okay?
Right.
So if you're doing better today than you were yesterday, be proud of the fact that you're working towards something better. MAT keeps people alive. I know people that have been on MAT long term, and for them, that's the best thing possible because they know that they would progress back to where they were if they wasn't on it. So, of course, because here's my mentality with it. If you say somebody is not sober on MAT, but then you look at the fact that in the last 2 or 3 years they've been on it, let's say, Now they're able to maintain a job. Now they got their kids back that had been took from them. Now they have a house. Tell me that's not a better, more progression towards a positive life than when they were previously. Who are we to judge that they just happen to take a medication in the morning that keeps them from going out stealing your shit?
right. And
be
here's
glad
the
about that.
Lately, kind of where my focus has been on that argument, and it is an argument. I mean, I hate that it is, but it's what it is that if you shame somebody by telling them that they're not sober and that their recovery path isn't valid, and quite often that happens in the rooms, right, when it does happen, you are potentially taking away the one place that is easy to find fellowship in recovery. And if you take that away from somebody and they go back out, this day and age, we don't know if they're coming back because everybody's one use away, right? And so to me, that's the real tragedy. The real tragedy of it is there was a comment on a post that I ended up sharing. I don't know if you saw it, David, something to the effect of the recovery community is one of the most toxic things I've ever seen. We've all worked. We've all, you know, worked really hard to get our lives back. We've all almost died, and to be shamed by calling. By being called a junkie in denial, you know. So somebody had wrote that comment, and it was just like, "Fuck! If we messed up, man, we have failed." If one person feels that way when they're going to the only fucking place they know to go to get fellowship, then we're doing something wrong.
You're risking someone's life at that point.
100%, you are right. 100%, and I see it in the comments, and I argue it. Sometimes there's no point arguing because you're not going to change anybody's mind. But what if here's the thing, if one person said it, 1,000% thought it, right? So if you get into those comments on social media and you start having that discussion, maybe you're not going to change your mind, but maybe somebody who's reading it, their mind is going to change. It's kind of my attitude to it. And so I just keep having the fight, even though it's like banging your head against the wall some days. But, you know, that's one of the hills I'm willing to die on, I guess, right? Because I don't know about you, man, but I stopped collecting people that are suffering in addictions 16, 17 months ago, almost now. And I've had way more than 17 phone calls about friends that are lost, you know, right? So,
do you see that form that I shared a few days ago? My ex-girlfriend that just passed away last week.
Yes, yes, I did.
That right there, for instance, I've been in contact. I've talked to her mother and her stepfather and told them, look, I know when they have the memorial service for and all that, I apologize. I'm sorry that I'm not sorry that I have to protect my recovery. I'm not going to be there, but I will do everything I can to spread awareness. I will do everything I can to use her words to possibly keep someone else from not going as deep as we did, to realize that there is time to get out. But that's all. And they fully understood and respected and told me that was awesome that I had the mentality of, look, there will be people there that are still in active addiction, and I just cannot, I can't do it.
I got to protect
my recovery. I mean,
damn straight, man. Yeah. There's nothing more important, right? Nothing more important. Yeah. I mean, there's a million cliches about that, but geez, man, geez. And I'm real sorry about that loss too, brother. I really am. I hope it does serve to inspire or ward somebody off of, you know, making those kind of choices, I guess, right?
But where I shared it around, it got, I think it got about 2,500 likes and 130 shares, that poem of hers that I put out. And her word is, it's a sad truth, but every single word in that poem was.
Yeah, cool. Man. 100. So let's talk about skydiving. Let's talk about that, bro. I got to tell you, it just came up in an episode with someone that we were talking about you. And people are talking about you these days, man. They really are. And for good reason, right? I think that was an episode of Black Ash. I think you were probably in the comments because I was talking about the timeline. Just about this first annual and like right from the start, man, like where's that idea come from? How the hell did you pull it off so fast? Tell me about that.
Okay. Well, it started off literally. It just says, I want to do it. Yeah. Just for me. And I put a post on Facebook and said, I may have lost my leg, but I didn't lose my balls. Who wants to go skydive with me? And that's all it was. And a friend of mine, Melissa Williams, we call her Mima, she lost her daughter to fentanyl a couple years ago.
Okay.
And she sent me a private message and said, my daughter always wanted to skydive. If I send you a picture of her, will you put it in your pocket when you jump? And it lit that spark. I said, that's what I'm supposed to do. So I put a post, I put word out there everywhere and said, if you have any of your loved ones that have been lost to overdose and you want them memorialized in a skydiving event, I had people submit pictures to me of their loved ones. We took about 35 loved ones up on the air with us. I wore a collage shirt. It had people's pictures on it. We had, and then our press that we used for the sublimation presses, that they actually burnt up that morning. So I had the shirt on with the pictures, and then everybody else had the print that we were supposed to put. So the pictures still went up, but everybody else was on a printed sheet where mine was on the shirt. Yeah. But either way, we got all 35 of them up there.
Wow, man.
I had a good friend of mine that owns a catering company. He came and volunteered and did the cooking. He had a big double smoker out there. I bought over 150 pounds of pork barbecue, about 100 pounds of beef barbecue. And I mean, we had a spread out there. Wow. I had some amazing, I set this up in 2 weeks now, remember. I had Mike Meadows, Sober Talk Jess, Rachel Palante, and Joe Stan all came to the event just to speak at it. Rachel Palante drove 8 hours to come.
That's amazing.
Mike Meadows and Sober Jess, they drove like 5 hours to come.
No kidding.
Joe lives in Raleigh already, so he was the lucky one. He's on. I had to go two hours to it. They actually believed in it that fast and said, "Let's go do it." So of course we've got the videos of all of us giving their testimony and this and that. If y'all want to go check those out, man, it was a beautiful day.
No kidding.
And I'm so excited to when we can do the Heal Awareness Jump 2000, because where this one was set up in 2 weeks, and of course it ended up a lot of scrambling. Like I said, our press actually burned up that morning, so we just got a replacement one in. So I actually spent $2,300 of my own money to make this happen.
And well, I have a feeling next year you're going to see some help with that.
Exactly. And that's why I tell myself I'm not even mad that I ended up going $2,100 in the hole. I got $220 worth of donations. I spent
$2,300.
But the thing is that I'm going to dig out of this hole.
Yeah.
I'm a disabled veteran. Shoot, I have my pension check from getting hurt in the military. I have another one in a couple of weeks. So I'll get back out of the hole. I ain't worried about it. I've ate ramen noodles for a few weeks before. I'll be all right.
That's been breakfast, lunch, and supper for a few days now. So I hear you there, brother. Yeah. Hey, at least you got a home to do them in, though, right? You know, these days.
It's
kind of my attitude, right? You got to be grateful for that stuff. Hey, but
yeah,
that's fucking crazy, man. I just can't believe in 2 weeks that you managed to pull that off. So what's it going to be like when you have 52 more weeks or whatever it is, right, to get that done, right? That's awesome.
Especially with we'll get into the progression of the next 4 months of stuff that I have, the buildup for every one of these little discussions I'm going to drop to talk about Hill 2025's jump. We're going to have that with Rocky.
Yeah, no kidding, right? No kidding. Yeah. No kidding, man. Well, I would say I would come, but I'm not going to fly, 30 hours to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. That's probably not going to happen. I'll certainly be paying a lot of attention to it, right? What else you got going on, man? I know there's some things you want to talk about, so let's just take control of this conversation, bro. What you want to talk about?
Absolutely. I'll sit there and I'll say the progression of my life right now is just a blessing to me to be able to sit there and intercommunicate with some of the individuals I have. I mean, like, here's one example. 20 years ago, I used to sell substances. The sheriff of my county, Sheriff Tony Durden, he was on the investigating team trying to get me back then. Okay.
Yeah.
Now he's the sheriff of the entire county. I've got videos. Yeah. I've got videos on here of me and him in church together. This man stood up in front of the church and told the congregation that story that he investigated me, so he had seen where I was and he sees where I am to listen to me, that he trusts me and believes in what I'm doing. And that's small country town, the county sheriff's, that's the most powerful individual that there is. And for him to be willing to sit there and say that, because my goal is to get an addiction recovery center built here in my town. So my county sheriff is helping me get the word out here in my community so we can get the support to get that center built.
That's funny. There's a parallel to there too with me, brothers. Sometime this week, my arresting officer reached out to me randomly. Right. And just like, "Hey man, see what you're doing. Think it's awesome." And our last conversation was not a good conversation, our in-person conversation. Right. So that meant a lot to me. That meant, like a lot, right. To say, wow, that's crazy. Right. There's actually an episode that'll be coming out yesterday because I'm going to release that one here tomorrow. So end years on Thursday, this one that we're recording right now on Thursday. So the episode that I recorded last was with a fellow Robert Greer from the Warrior's Heart. Do you know what these guys are about? Warriors.
I don't know that one right off.
They are a treatment center for vets and first responders exclusively.
I heard you talking about it on Black Ash the other night. That's right.
Oh, man. Is this a powerful group? Yeah, Texas and somewhere else too. Yeah. I think he lives in Louisiana himself, but what a fucking great organization, man. Just like, it's crazy, you know. So just sitting here listening to you now, being a vet and all that, it just makes me think about it, right? So, well, I guess, are you considered a vet because you never went to combat? Did you still
I'm considered a veteran. I'm a service connected veteran. I receive a pension check for the rest of my life because of the injury. I'm service connected. Okay. Because the reason it is because I was, honorably medically discharged after I got hurt in a training accident. It's not like I did something to get kicked out. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I'd already been through all of my training. I'd actually already been in for 2 years. The MOS that I had was called Microwave Systems Operator and Maintainer, Cross-Chain Satellite Communications, and Computer Networking. So my school was 54 weeks long.
It's the
longest MOS training in the entire Army. So I'd already should have been in for a decent little while before this ends up happening, but I didn't see active duty, but I'm still considered just the same because of, I didn't do anything wrong.
Of course. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Prosthetic leg. I want to talk about that, actually. Obviously, that's covered by Veteran Affairs, which I'm thankful for that, because I know that can be a massive expenditure on something,
The seven surgeries and the prosthetics and all that right there, the VA's paid out about $1.8 million right now.
Wow, man. Wow. I'm glad you had that coverage, because how does an average person do that, right? No kidding. So your prosthetic leg, do you get around good on it now? Is there a lot of work to do that way? Or I don't know how these things work, right? If it's a
the weight of it is significantly heavier than what your natural. So it feels like lumpy, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I suppose because it is technically this hanging off of you, right? Like it's not like it's
absolutely
so instead of supporting you, it's kind of, hey, I can appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It the agility of it doesn't move like your natural gait and all that right there. Actually, I go to physical therapy twice a week. Better at walking. I just got my permanent prosthetic on January 3rd, but that was my seventh prosthetic.
Oh, wow.
I've been through six already before we got to the good one, the one I got now.
Okay. Is that like carbon fiber these days?
The whole top section of it is carbon fiber, and then the bottom section of it is titanium.
Okay, cool. Really cool.
And it's got a foot on it, which is where the toes on the foot is like this long. It's crazy. But the foot looks natural. But what I thought was weird, I was like, why is the sock under the foot? Because it's like the foot's exposed, and they have a sock under it. Okay. And the guy explained to me, it's actually, the sock is actually Kevlar. The reason is because the foot, it's a titanium foot and then a Kevlar sock and then a rubber footy over top of it. And the reason it is because if they didn't do that, the titanium foot would rub through the rubber, foot looking thing. If they didn't have that Kevlar sock, that Kevlar sock is like a middle, It
makes
sense once they explained it to me that way.
Of course it does.
Looks weird, but, obviously the initial learning how to walk on it was extreme. I mean, I've been in a wheelchair for, a year.
Okay.
It's pretty wild the initial, but I'm a hard worker.
Yeah, well, and obviously,
I don't give up. I'm getting better at it. Obviously, it's still a lot of work. When I walk on uneven ground, I walk with a cane. But, I walk with a cane anytime instead of sitting in a wheelchair with no leg going, I wish I could do something. We got to push forward.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. No choice. No other option but, right? So.
Yeah.
What else you got? You mentioned something coming up in May here. What's going on there?
We got more than May. I got some more before May.
Okay. Yeah. I did say you take control here. Then I started yapping again. So go ahead.
Oh, you're great, brother. Yesterday I went on with Josh Catlett at Scar Nation and did one with him. Today, obviously, we're coming on with you. Then Friday I'm coming on Black Ash with y'all.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are.
The April 2nd.
Oh, you know what? You know who else is coming on Black Ash with us? We got Sonya Johnson. Sonya's coming on. Yeah, she's cool. And I can't say yet because I have got a confirmation, but definitely Sonia. I'm hoping that Adriana comes from Dear Recovery. So Sonia's going to reach out to her for me on that one, and it should be great, right? Yeah. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. I hadn't talked to Sonia. I sat down with Sonia Johnson and Jamie Tall, did an interview with them about the 1st of December.
You know, the first time I met them was a games night that Sonia was hosting. So Sonia and Jamie were together at her place in Florida. At Sonia's, and I was still at the Yatra Treatment Center here in Thailand doing my trauma treatment, but I jumped in and had a games night with them. That was that's how I met the two of them, and that inspired that nonsense. How they not the games nights that we do now, which are out off the hook sometimes.
Yeah, this past one was.
Oh my Lord! I think the one before I
had like five violations pop up on me during that live, and I'm in the comments.
You know, you're doing something right? Fuck yeah, yeah. That was crazy, man. That was out of control.
It was.
Okay. So what's next? What else you got coming up?
Yep. All right. And then April 2nd, I'm going on with Kalisha Campbell. She runs Pine Case Mental. She's out of Canada.
Okay.
And then April 21st, another Canadian, I'm going on with High Sobriety Podcast. I think you're going on with them a couple weeks before me.
Yeah, I'm April 3rd. Yeah.
Then May 3rd, I'm going on with Ian Bick.
Nice.
I'm flying to Connecticut, going to do Ian Bick's show. And then I'm going to drive to Buffalo, New York, Jared and Brianna of the Blacklist Podcast. I'm going to meet them on May 4th with Jared and Brianna to a fentanyl overdose rally. We're going to do that.
Yeah.
I'll fly back home to North Carolina. And then on May 18th, I'm flying to Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be doing another overdose skydive event in Waverly, Tennessee.
Okay.
I can't say right now who all we've got because we don't have full confirmations, but we've got some people coming in that are
big hitters.
My mind that they even know who I am, let alone are willing to come and support something I'm trying to do. It's beautiful.
No kidding. But it's,
then it's another one.
What's happening on July 13th?
All right. In Washington, D.C., the Lost Voices of Fentanyl rally.
Yeah.
I put a post up about 7 or 8 days ago saying I had two goals for this year. One was to get on Ian Bick's podcast, and the other was to stand on stage with Matt Keegan and Benjamin Lerner, the three of us on the stage together in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
Within 5 days, I had both of them lined up.
That is just awesome. Awesome.
Benjamin and Matt will be there performing at the Lost Voices of the Fentanyl rally. And Ben said between songs, he's letting me get, I'm going to step up and tell my story to the crowd.
That's awesome.
It'll be at the Washington Monument, the rally, and then there will be a march to the White House where there'll be a protest held in front of the White House.
Okay.
And then on August the 8th, our friend Jamie Tall, me and her are we're keynote speakers at an event on August the 8th in Rockingham, North Carolina, called Steve's Wings.
Okay. What's that about?
It's another overdose rally. It's a lady. Her father passed away, and that was Steve. And so that got her. This is a 501c that they run that supports veterans. Rockingham, North Carolina is right beside Fayetteville, which is where Fort Bragg is at.
So they
do a lot of supporting veterans and things in the organization. And that's part of the reason why I was on with Jamie Tall and Sonia Johnson doing an interview with them. And Jamie suggested I link up with these people. She contacted them, talked to them, and then they contacted me and asked me to come on to be a keynote speaker.
That's recovery community for you right there, right?
That's it.
Yeah, man.
We're stronger together.
Yeah, we are. It blows my mind, man. It does. Just consistently. It's anywhere in the world right now. If you need help and you contacted any one of the people any one of the names, ourselves, you meet, whatever, you're going to find it. Because if I don't know somebody, she does, and she doesn't know somebody, you know, somebody, she does, and off it goes, right? Ireland, South Africa, Thailand, Australia, United States, Canada. These are all places that, you know, right, that we've got resources now. It's pretty crazy. London as well, right? Yeah.
The reach of social media can be unbelievable when used correctly.
Yeah, right. I mean, people like to complain about the toxicity of it, and there is, Lord knows, there is a lot of that, but, you know, whatever. Fuck them, you know?
you have that anywhere. It is what it is.
Yeah,
I was talking to somebody yesterday about that, and, you know, when you got somebody hating on you, it means you're doing something right.
Yeah, Yeah. Dan from Arnox Ox likes to say that. Yeah. If you haven't pissed somebody off, you're not doing it right. So, right.
Yeah.
Listen, man. So let's get your website again. It's heal-family.com, correct?
Yeah. Right? Yes. Heal-family. And we're working now to have the full merch lineup loaded. So by the time this show goes on Thursday, there will be a full line on there. We do sublimation, we do DTF, we do vinyl, we got tumbler cups, we got hats, we got hoodies, we got shirts, we got mouse pads. Nice. We have these awesome ornaments that we do. They're really cool. Cool. We'll have all those on there by the end of the week. And all awesome. Of it is to support. The end mission is, the end goal, I want to become a 501c and open that recovery center here in my town. That's what my mission is.
Nice. Well, something tells me you'll get her done, brother. It seems to me that if you draw a bead on something, it tends to happen. So,
here's my thing. When we were using, we gave 100% of energy, 24 hours a day, to focus on getting that fixed, right? So what happens when you take that same energy, energy that you put into using, that same energy that you put into death, and you put it into life, you put it in trying to help your community, you try to better yourself, trying to better others. You can, 100%. The moon is the limit when you're sitting there shooting, man. You know what I'm saying? When you put all that into it, nothing will stop you.
I'm a hard-ass worker.
Ain't nothing stopping me.
I have to say, if all the drug addicts in the world got sober together at the same time, the rest of y'all would be screwed because you'd be working for us, right? You know, Absolutely. It's just like the kind of dedication it takes to maintain a habit, you know, and survive on the streets or whatever while you're doing it and all that jazz. Fuck, we'd have world hunger, world peace, fucking global warming, and we'd figure out where the socks went in the dryer all inside a week. It's all nonsense compared to what we had to go through to survive an active addiction, right? So
that's absolute facts right there.
right. Listen, and your social, my dog started acting up there. I can hear all the dogs in the neighborhood barking. It usually happens around this time of night. So, little shit. Your social media page, David Riggins, right? That's
what we're going. My Facebook is David.
Of course. Right. Yeah.
And then, TikTok is David_Riggins.
Okay. And all those links, of course, are in the bio page that you filled out for me. That's going to be attached to this episode. Yes. So all you got to do is click on his name for all that jazz, right? So,
or if you go to heal-family.com, heal-family.com, we have links on there to get you to any of all of our. Of course you do. I have seven different platforms on my own. They're all listed on the site.
Awesome. That brings us to my favorite part of the show, David. That's daily gratitudes. So what you got for us today?
And I am grateful that. Yeah, I woke up this morning with the mindset of wanting to become a better person instead of wanting to retaliate, go back to what I was. I want to actually help people today instead of worrying about what's up here.
Yeah. That's a great gratitude, man. It really is. Myself, I'm grateful for this noisy little bastard, my dog, Sonny. If you want to see more of him, you can check him out at Sonny in the Sidecar on Facebook, guys. I do like to
post some videos. He's a fun dog, y'all should.
I enjoy
the reels that you do with you and Sonny.
Yeah. Also, I am grateful to every single person who continues to like, comment, share, watch, do all the things. You know what they are down at the bottom of the screen there. So every time you do any one of those things, you're getting me a little bit closer to living my best life. My best life is to make a humble living, spreading the message. The message is this. If you're in active addiction right now, today could be that day. Today could be that day that you start a lifelong journey. Reach out to a friend, reach out to a family member, call into detox, pray, go to church. I don't really care. Do whatever it is you got to do to get that journey started, because it is so much better than the alternative. And if you have a loved one who's still suffering an addiction right now, if you just took the time to listen to our conversation, if you just take one more minute out of your day and text that person, let them know they are loved. Use the words.
You are loved.
The little glimmer of hope just might be the thing that brings them back. Boom. Nice. Good job, bro.